This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had to be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. The first show tonight is from the Lux Radio Theater, which was, as you might suspect, a classic radio anthology. It was the most popular dramatic anthology series on radio and broadcast for more than 20 years. Lux Radio Theater ran between 1934 and 1955. On the NBC Blue Network in 1934, ran through 1935, then switched to CBS, where it ran until 1954, then back to NBC for 54 and 55. Now, by the way, it continued on television as Lux Video Theater throughout most of the 1950s. It began by adapting Broadway stage works and then went to films, 4-hour-long programs performed live before studio audiences. The particular episode tonight is an adaptation of the 1949 film noir classic, The Third Man, featuring the star of the film, Joseph Cotten, reprising his role.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Joseph Cotten and Evelyn Keyes in The Third Man.
When the funeral was over, I left the cemetery with a British officer, Major Calloway. He offered to drive me back into town, then he said he thought I needed a drink. The Major was right.
Yes, you've had a bit of a shock, Mr. Martins. You say you arrived in Vienna only this morning?
Just in time to go to the funeral.
You came to Vienna to attend the funeral?
Came here to go to work. A friend of mine offered me a job, publicity work, for some kind of charity he was running. Well, my friend's dead.
Harry Lime offered you a job?
Best friend I ever had.
You're a writer, you say?
Ever hear of The Lone Rider of Santa Fe? Death at Double X Ranch?
I can't say that I have.
Well, don't get any ideas about money. I'm broke. Harry even sent me the plane ticket.
No money at all?
Little, not very much.
Where are you staying?
I was going to stay with him. It was the porter at his apartment house who told me.
Told you what, Mr. Martins?
About the accident. Harry had been killed.
He didn't have many friends, did he? I mean, well, at the cemetery, for instance, a handful of people.
Well, who were they? Do you know them?
I know who they are, yes. A Dr. Winkle, Baron Kurtz, a girl named Anna Schmidt.
Oh, what a waste. A shame.
What?
His dying like that.
The best thing that ever happened to him. Martins, your friend Harry Lime was about the worst racketeer that ever made a dirty living in this city.
So that's what you are, policeman.
This is the international zone. Your country, too, has military police here. So do the French and the Russians. We try to work together.
Some petty racket with gasoline or something. You pin it on a dead man, just like a cop.
It wasn't gasoline, Mr.
Martins. It was tires or saccharin. Why don't you catch a few murderers for a change?
Murder was part of Harry Lime's racket. Sergeant Penn.
Yes, sir?
Drive Mr. Martins to Sacher's Hotel.
Very good, sir.
Nothing elegant, Mr. Martins. Military personnel mostly, but you...
Now, just a minute, Callahan.
Calloway, I'm English.
You're not going to close your files at a dead man's expense.
Oh, so you're going to find me the real criminal. Sounds like one of your stories.
Oh, when I'm finished with you, you'll leave Vienna. You'll look so silly.
You said you had very little cash. Here. Take this army money. It'll see you through until tomorrow, and we'll hold a seat for you on the plane. All right, Sergeant. Take him to Zarka's.
He gave me a room on the second floor, and I'd hardly closed the door when the telephone rang. Hello?
Mr. Martin.
Who's this?
Baron Kurtz.
Who?
Baron Kurtz. I was a friend of Harry Lime.
Oh, yes. I'd like very much to meet you, Baron. Can you come over here?
Austrians are not allowed in your hotel, Mr. Martin. Could we not meet at the Mozart Cafe? It is just around the corner.
How'll I know you?
I will carry one of your books. Harry gave it to me. The Oklahoma Kid.
I'll be right over.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
I am delighted to meet you, sir. What would you like, tea, coffee?
Coffee, please, Black.
Zwei Schwarze, bitte. It is wonderful how you keep the tension.
Tension?
The suspense. In this book, I mean.
Oh. So you were a friend of Harry's, Barrington?
I think his best. Except you, of course.
Now, the police have a crazy notion he was mixed up in some sort of racket.
Mr. Martins, who in Vienna is not? We all sell cigarettes and that kind of thing. I have done things that would have seemed unthinkable before the war.
I'm afraid the police meant more than that.
And they get some rather absurd ideas sometimes. Poor Harry. Where he is now, he will not mind.
Even so, I'm not going to leave it at this. Will you help me?
I wish I could. But I am an Austrian. I have to be very careful. I'm afraid I cannot help you. Except with advice, of course. Advice.
I want to know how he was killed.
With the truck? He was struck by the truck.
I mean, how? How did it happen?
We will drink our coffee, Mr. Martins. It is not far from here where it happened. We will walk there, and I will show you. We walked out of the apartment, Mr. Martins, there where the porter is sweeping. We started toward the corner when a friend of Harry's called to him from over there.
That square across the street?
Exactly. Harry stepped off the curb and started over. The truck came from that direction.
That quickly?
That quickly. His friend and I picked him up. We carried him to this very spot. Even at the end, his thoughts were of you.
What did he say?
I cannot remember the exact words. He was anxious I should look after you when you arrived.
But the porter told me he died instantaneously.
Well, before the ambulance could reach us.
No. There were only you and this friend of his. Who was he?
A Romanian, Mr. Popescu.
I'd like to talk to him.
He has left Vienna.
Oh, excuse me. I want to ask the porter something. Did you know Mr. Lime well?
Mr. Lime... Yes.
You remember me. This morning I was here.
Yes, I remember you.
Well, who used to visit Mr. Lime?
Visit? Was will er wissen?
Er will wissen, wer hier verkehrt.
So, es kommen so viele Leute
Hallo.
Hier, dass ich... Ja, Mitzi?
Kannst du herkommen?
Ja, ein Moment.
Nicht später, jetzt. Du musst zum Telefon.
Please, you will excuse me.
Baron Kurtz, who was at the funeral beside you?
You saw them. Only his doctor, Dr. Winkle, and the British officer.
Wasn't a girl there?
Oh, yes. Some girl of the Josefstadt Theater. You know how Harry was.
You don't know her name?
I do not think I ever heard it. Mr. Martins, you do better to think of yourself now.
I'll be all right.
Of course. And you will forgive me if I run along now?
If I should want to talk with you again, Baron...
You will find me at the Casanova Club every night. One has to work, you know. And I'm so glad to have met you, Mr. Martins, and your book, a masterpiece of suspense... Such a good cover, too, I think.
Oh, yes. Mr. Martins, isn't it?
It's my key, please. 226.
Yes, sir.
Oh, how can I get a ticket for the Josefstadt Theater for tonight?
Well, I think we can arrange that. Speaking of tickets, sir.
Huh?
Major Calloway's compliments, sir. And a ticket for tomorrow's plane.
Oh, well, you can tell Major Calloway that I won't need it. I've decided to stay for a while.
Oh?
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Martins, I will tell him.
That night I went to the Josefstadt Theater. After the performance... A pack of cigarettes got me past the doorman to Anna Schmidt's dressing room.
Holly Martins? That name is supposed to mean something to me?
I thought perhaps Harry told you about me.
No, he never told me about his friends.
I enjoyed the play very much. You were awfully good.
You are not here to talk about my performance.
No, about Harry. Had you known him long?
Yes, but there is nothing really to say, is there? Nothing.
I saw you at the cemetery this morning.
I'm sorry. I did not notice much.
You were in love with him, weren't you?
I do not know. How can you know a thing like that afterwards? I do not know anything anymore, except I want to be dead, too.
I was talking to another friend of Harry's, Baron Kurtz. Do you know him?
I have met him. He brought me some money when Harry died. He said Harry had been anxious at the last moment.
He said Harry spoke of me, too. Seems to show he wasn't in much pain.
Dr. Winkle told me that.
Dr. Winkle?
The doctor Harry used to go to. He was passing just after it happened.
His own doctor just passing?
Yes. They said it was not the driver's fault. Harry had often said what a careful driver he was.
The man in the truck was Harry's driver? Well, I just don't understand all this. His own driver knocking him down, his own doctor just passing by.
I have wondered about it 100 times. But what difference does it make? He's dead.
But if it wasn't an accident...
I'm sorry, I cannot stay here. The manager does not like us to use the electricity.
Would you come with me?
Where?
To Harry's apartment.
At this hour?
Well, the porter there saw it happen.
Well, then why worry?
You know that porter?
Yes. All right, Mr. Martins. We will speak to the porter.
We talk inside in Herr Lime's apartment. Sehen Sie, da, gleich da drunten, Fräulein, da herunten ist es passiert.
What's he saying?
Come over to the window. He says it happened right down there.
Down there,
you,
yes.
You saw it happen?
Not so. Heard. Huh. I heard the brakes. And then I saw them carry the body to the other side of the Emperor Joseph statue.
Why didn't they bring him in the house? Could he have been conscious?
Conscious? Das soll ich auch noch wissen.
Conscious? Well, was he still alive?
Alive? He could not have been alive, not with his head in the way it was.
Well, then how could he have talked about me, about this lady here? And why didn't you say all this at the inquest?
It is better to say nothing. I was not the only one.
No, who else?
3 men carry your friend to that statue down there.
Yeah. Kurtz?
Yes.
This Romanian?
Yes.
Who else? You mean the doctor?
No. There was a 3rd man. He come later, after they carried him to the statue.
Well, who?
Well, I did not see his face. He might have been just anybody.
Just anybody? I was told there were only 2 men there. You've got to tell this story to the police.
Police? Well, why police? This is alles Blödsinn, was ich da sage. This is all crazy. It was an accident.
Was it? You don't know it was an accident. But you only saw a dead man and 3 men carrying.
I should listen to my wife, keep my mouth shut, say nothing.
Suppose I take your evidence to the police.
I have no evidence. It is not my business.
You can make it your business.
Fräulein Schmidt.
We had better leave, Mr. Martins.
Well, can I take you home?
It does not matter, if you want to.
Outside in the corridor was a little boy. He was bouncing a rubber ball. Looked up and stared at me.
You said that thing for 3 birds, Nick Bart. Sie haben ihn missgehen.
Hansel, komm sofort hier, du musst zu Bett.
Wie hast du den Mann? Du hast den Portier.
Well, what was that all about?
He says you do not like the porter.
Yes, he says you do not like me. Maybe he is right. Good night, Mr. Martins.
I took on a home, a small apartment building. We paused a moment in the entrance.
I have been thinking, leave Vienna, Mr. Martins.
You're not the first person who's told me
that. There is nothing you can do here.
But if I do find something, may I look you up again?
Oh, you know where I work, you know where I live, but I...
Suddenly the door in front of us flung open, a woman. She pushed me aside, talking to Anna excitedly.
Unglaublich, Fräulein, die Polizei ist open.
She's talking about
the police. They're upstairs searching my room.
I followed Anna to her room. In it were Sergeant Payne and Major Calloway.
Well, you're getting around, aren't you, Mr. Martin?
What the devil is this, Calloway? Pinning things on girls now?
And Miss Schmidt, I should like to see your papers, please.
Don't you give him anything.
Here, my passport.
Thank you. You were born in Salzburg of Austrian parents?
Yes.
How much did you pay for this passport, Miss Schmidt? Well, it doesn't matter. I'm afraid I'll have to keep it for a while. Give Miss Schmidt a receipt, Sergeant. Oh, and for these letters, too.
Yes, sir.
I suppose it wouldn't interest you to know that Harry Lime was murdered. No, you're too busy. You haven't even bothered to get the complete evidence.
My letters, must you take them?
They'll be returned, miss.
But they're private papers.
Oh, that's all right, miss. We're used to it. Like doctors.
There was a 3rd man there. I suppose that doesn't sound peculiar to you, Calloway.
I'm not interested in how a racketeer like Lime was killed. The only important thing is that he's dead. I'm sorry, Miss Schmidt.
Must you take those letters? They're Harry's. They're only love letters.
They'll be returned as soon as we've examined them.
Harry never did anything. Only a small thing once, out of kindness.
And what was that?
My passport. You have it in your hand.
Oh. You'll have to come along with us, Miss Schmidt.
You're not locking her up.
Oh, Martins, be sensible. You don't know what you're mixing in. Get the next plane.
As soon as I get to the bottom of this, I'll get the next plane.
Death is at the bottom of everything, Martins. Leave death to the professional.
You mind if I use that line in my next Western? You can't chuck me out, Major. My papers are in order.
Look, is anything really wrong with your passport?
It was forged.
Why?
The Russians would claim me. I come from Czechoslovakia, yes, and
you
if
don't
I...
mind, Miss Schmidt. Good night, Martins.
I stood on the sidewalk as they drove off. Then I remember the doctor, Dr. Winkel. I got his address from a telephone book and hailed a taxi cab.
What can I do for you, Mr. Martins?
I realize this is no time of night to be calling, Doctor, but... Well, we were both friends of Harry Lyme, and
I was his medical advisor, yes.
And I want to find out all I can.
I can tell you very little. He was dead when I arrived.
Yeah, who was with him?
Two friends of his.
Two? Two, are you sure?
Quite sure, Mr. Martins.
Could he have been at all conscious?
I understand he was, for a short time. But I was not there when it happened. My opinion is limited to the causes of death. Have you any reason to be dissatisfied?
Well, is it possible that his death might have been not accidental? Could he have been pushed, Doctor?
I cannot give an opinion. The injuries to the head and skull would have been the same. And now I'm afraid I
yes,
must...
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Well, Sergeant, come in, come in.
I followed Martin, sir. He went to Dr. Winkle's home. Then he came back here.
Here?
He's down on the street, sir. Waiting for Miss Schmidt, I would imagine.
She's in the other office. Bring her in. Oh, I showed her forged passport to the French, the Americans, and the Russians.
Yes, sir.
Our Russian friend, Captain Brodsky, is very interested. He wants us to hold it until he can talk to Colonel Polikov. Well, bring her in, sir.
My papers. You have not returned everything, have you?
I'm sorry. We'll need your passport for a while longer. Miss Schmidt, you knew Harry Lyne very well, didn't you?
We loved each other. Is that what you mean?
Would you look at this photograph, please? Do you know this man also?
I have never seen him.
Perhaps you've heard of him. Joseph Harbin? He works in a military hospital.
No.
Miss Schmidt, it's stupid to lie to me. I'm in a position to help you considerably.
I am not lying. You are wrong about Harry. You are wrong about everything.
In one of his letters, Harry Lyme asked you to telephone Joseph at the Casanova Club. What was the message?
It was not important. Something about meeting Harry at his home.
Joseph Harbin disappeared the day you telephoned. Now, we've got to find him, and you can help us.
What can I tell you but that you have got everything upside down? Am I under arrest?
No. No, we'll send for you when we want you.
Thank you.
That American is still waiting for you out there. He won't do you much good, Miss Schmidt.
No.
No. Good night, Miss Schmidt.
Good evening. Well, you have found out my little secret, Mr. Martins. The Baron Kurtz, a violin player in a cheap cafe. Good evening, Miss Schmidt.
Good evening.
You have proved the police to be wrong, Mr. Martins.
No, no, not yet.
Mr. Popesco is here tonight.
Oh, I thought you said he'd left Vienna.
He is back now. I will bring him here to your table.
You have not done enough for tonight.
But the porter said three men carried the body, and two of them are here.
You, of course, know Miss Schmidt. Mr. Popesco, Mr. Martin.
How do you do?
How do you do? Any friend of Harry's is a friend of mine.
There. Now I leave you together.
Mr. Popesco, I understand you were with Harry when the truck came.
Oh, it was a terrible thing. I was just crossing the road. He and the Baron were on the sidewalk. Maybe if I had not called to him, he stepped off to meet me, and I have never seen a man killed before.
I think there's something funny about the whole thing.
Funny?
Something wrong.
Of course there was. It was so insane for a man like Harry Lyme to be killed in a street accident.
That's all you meant?
But what else, Mr. Martin?
Who was the third man?
Now, what man would you be referring to, please?
I was told that a third man helped you and Kurtz carry him.
A third man?
Hmm.
Who could have told you a story like that?
The porter.
He saw the accident?
The porter?
You saw three men carrying the body.
I do not seem to recall the porter at the police inquiry.
Well, he doesn't want to get involved.
Involved? It is his duty to give evidence, even though he remembered wrong. He told you more, Mr. Martin?
That Harry was dead before you got him to the statue. Somebody's lying, Mr. Popescu.
Oh, no, not necessarily.
The British police say Harry was mixed up in some racket.
Impossible. Harry had a great sense of duty, yes, Miss Schmidt?
I am afraid I have not been listening.
If there's anything else, Mr. Martin?
No. Thanks for stopping by.
It was my pleasure. Good night, Miss Schmidt.
Good night.
This is a nice girl, Mr. Martin, but she ought to go careful in Vienna. A city like this, everybody ought to be careful.
Next morning, I went to Harry's apartment house. That little boy with the rubber ball was playing on the sidewalk.
Sie suchen den Portier, heißt im Keller.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Sonny. You're 100% right.
Haben Sie gestern gehört?
Yeah.
Sie haben mit dem Portier
gehört. What do you want of me now? Is it so important always to ask me questions?
Yes, it is.
I am not a bad man. I would like to tell you something.
Then how did a car, a truck...
Shh! Not now, not here. My wife, if she thinks I tell you anything...
All right, but when?
Come tonight. Early tonight. My wife goes out.
But why does it have to be...
Shh! Tonight. You come here tonight.
Clarissa?
Does that mean come in?
Oh, yes, come in.
Hope you don't mind. I have something to tell you. The porter's going to talk to us again tonight.
Oh, need we go through it all again?
Well, I'd manage by myself, then. You'll be at the theater, I suppose.
No, we do three plays a week. I do not appear again until Thursday.
Then why don't you want to... Bad day, huh?
It is always bad about this time. Harry used to stop by around 6. I have been frightened before of being alone, without friends, without money. But I have never known anything like this. Please, tell me about him.
Tell you what?
Oh, anything. When did you see him last? What did you do?
We didn't make much sense. We drank too much. Once he tried to steal my girl.
Where is she?
Oh, that was many years ago.
Tell me more.
Well, it's very difficult. You knew Harry. We didn't do anything very amusing. He just made everything seem like, I don't know, like a lot of fun.
Was he clever when he was a boy?
I suppose so. He could fix anything.
Harry fixed my papers for me. He heard the Russians were repatriating people like me who come from Czechoslovakia. He knew the right person right away for forging the stamps.
When he was 14, he taught me 3 card tricks. That's growing up fast.
Oh, he never grew up. The world grew up around him, that's all. And buried him.
No, Anna, no. Don't. You'll fall in love again.
No, I do not want to. Never. I do not want to. If we have to see the porter, we had better go.
Well, a moment ago, you didn't want to see the porter.
We are both in it, Harry.
Holly. Holly Martin. Remember?
I am sorry.
It's all right. You might at least get my name right.
You know, you ought to find yourself a girl.
Yeah, that's just what I keep telling myself. It was dark when we turned the corner of Harry Street. We were still half a block away when Anna noticed the crowd milling around the entrance. There was an ambulance at the curb.
An accident. Another accident.
Wait here. Let me see what it's all about. What's the matter? What is lost?
The portier is umgebracht worden.
I don't understand.
A murder. The portier kaput.
Porter? But I...
The porter, dead. Somebody kills the porter.
The Pan,
Hans, so wie viel Mal muss ich dir sagen, von hier wegzustehen?
The Pan, der war's, der ist
der Mann. Was meinst du?
Der war's.
Suddenly everyone was silent. They were staring at me and drawing back, and that boy pointing his finger at me and shouting.
Ich hab es doch gesehen. Der ist der Mörder.
I didn't have to understand German to know what he meant. The porter had been murdered, and the boy was saying, I killed him. Suddenly the crowd became alive again. I grabbed Anna and we ran. It was Anna who said we didn't have to run anymore. And the alley behind us was empty. No one was up.
afraid. Like everyone in Vienna, afraid, even of you.
He was afraid, too. The porter. Now he's dead.
But the boy, why did the boy say that
I
you...
I don't know why.
What are you going to do? By now they've told the police they will be looking for you.
I'm not quite sure what I should do.
Well, then be sensible. Tell Major Calloway.
Calloway? Maybe you're right. And you.
I will go with you.
Now, who's being sensible now? You shouldn't even be seen with me. Here, take a taxi and go home. I'd better not see you again.
I agree with you, Mr. Martins. Good night.
I told you to leave, Martins. You're lucky we even got here alive. You've been blundering around with the worst bunch of racketeers in Vienna. Your precious Harry's friends. And now you're wanted for murder.
Well, put down drunk and disorderly too, Major Calloway.
Oh, stop behaving like a fool.
I'm only an amateur fool. You're the professional. You've been shaking your cap and bells all over Vienna.
I think it's time you heard the facts, Mr. Martins. I don't want another murder in this case, and you were born to be murdered. Have you ever heard of penicillin? In Vienna, there hasn't been enough penicillin to go round. There were a nice little trade started up. Stealing penicillin from the hospitals, diluting it to make it go further, and selling it to the patients. You know what that means?
It means you were too busy chasing a few tubes of penicillin to investigate a homicide.
These were homicides. Men with gangrenous legs. Women in childbirth. And there were children, too. They used some of this diluted penicillin against meningitis. This is the racket Harry Lime organized.
Calloway, you haven't shown me one shred of evidence.
No, we're just coming to that. Here. This is a photograph of a man called Hardin, a medical orderly at the General Hospital. He worked for Lime. He helped steal the penicillin from the laboratories. We forced him to give information to us, which led us as far as Kurtz and Lime.
But you didn't arrest them.
Our evidence wasn't complete. It might have spoiled our chances of getting the others.
I'd like a word with this Hardin fellow.
Would you, Mr. Martin?
Yeah.
So would I. He disappeared 4 days ago. Well, we'll have a look at Baron Kurtz. We know for a fact that Lime met Kurtz a little over a year ago. Well, now you know the facts, Mr. Martins. They turn my stomach.
How could he have done it? How could Harry have done it?
How? 70 pounds for a tube of penicillin? Hmm. Oh, you go back to the hotel, Mr. Martin. Stay in your room. About the porter, I'll fix that with the Austrian police, but I can't be responsible for you out on the streets.
I'm not asking you to.
I am sorry, Martin.
Still got that plane ticket?
It'll be at the hotel in the morning.
Well, this time, I think I'll use it.
Come in, Mr. Martins.
Thanks.
I thought you were going to Major Calloway.
That's where I've been.
You said you were not going to see me again.
I'm not. I just wanted to say goodbye. I'm going back home.
Why?
Well, it's what you've always wanted, all of you. Cat? I didn't know you had a cat. Kitty? Kitty, kitty? What's the matter? Don't you want to play?
I had better let him out.
He's not very sociable, is he?
He liked only Harry. What made you decide so suddenly... Or did Calloway tell you?
Tell me?
About Harry.
Do you know?
I also saw Calloway this afternoon. Harry is better dead. I knew he was mixed up, but not like that.
I knew him for 20 years. At least I thought I knew him. Suppose he was laughing at fools like us all the time?
He liked to laugh.
70 pounds a tube. He wanted me to write for his great medical charity. Perhaps I could have raised the price to 80 pounds.
Oh, please, for heaven's sake, stop making him in your image. Harry was real. He was not just your friend and my lover. He was Harry.
Don't preach to me. You talk about him as if he had occasional bad manners. Oh, I don't know. I'm just a hack. Writer who drinks too much and... falls in love with girls. You.
Me?
Don't be such a fool, of course.
Oh, if you had wronged me and asked me whether you were fair or dark or had a mustache, I would not have known.
I'm leaving Vienna. I don't care whether Harry was murdered by Kurtz or Popesco or the third man.
Oh, okay. We're going to take a quick break here now, but we'll be back real soon.
Care whether Harry was murdered by Kurtz or Popesco or the third man. Whoever killed him, there was some sort of justice. Maybe I would have killed him myself.
A person doesn't change because you find out more.
Look, I've got a splitting headache and you just stand there and talk and talk and talk. I hate it.
Oh, you hate it.
You know, that's the first time I ever heard you laugh. Do it again.
There is not enough for two laughs.
If I make comic faces... If I stand on my head, wouldn't stand a chance, would I? Oh, now, first you laugh, and now this.
Go away. Just go away.
It was dark in the street, deserted. The large, empty square with the black buildings looming up around it. Not a sound. Just the mewing of a cat. Kitty.
Kitty, kitty. Kitty.
Suddenly I saw the cat was licking a pair of black shoes. Who's there? What kind of a spy do you think you are, waiting in a doorway to tail me? Well, cat, got your tongue? Come out of there. Come on, out. Harry. Harry!
And this is where you think you saw him,
This is where you saw Harry lie.
This is where he vanished. I told you he came out of that doorway. Don't you believe me?
You heard footsteps, you saw a shadow, and then you saw Harry lie.
I tell you,
Oh, yes, yes, of course. And then he vanished with a puff of smoke and a clap of thunder.
What's that over there? That booth in the square?
It's a kiosk inside a steps leading down to the sewer tunnel.
Tunnel? You mean a man could...
All right, Martins. Yes, a man could go down there, but I don't believe he did, and I don't believe it was lying.
Then why did you even bother to come out here?
Do you realize what this means? What you're forcing me to do? If you saw Lime tonight, then someone else was buried in that cemetery.
It was like a page out of Edgar Allan Poe. The gravediggers, the men holding torches, the open casket, and then an official of the cemetery turning to Calloway.
You knew this man, Major? You can identify him?
Yes. Yes, I knew this man. Joseph Harbin, medical orderly at the General Hospital. Well, I suppose the least I can do is apologize, Martins. Obviously, you did see Harry Lyme.
Thanks.
I'll drop you off at the hotel and then I'll...
And if you don't mind, you can drop me off at Anna Schmidt's apartment.
You won't find her there.
Well, why not?
Because by now she's been arrested by Sergeant Payne.
Why, what for?
Her passport. She's wanted by the Russian police.
No.
She should be at my office by now.
Then I'd see her there.
No, Mr. Martins, you cannot see her there.
Have you just stepped in the office, Miss Schmidt? Major Calloway wants to speak to you.
I'm sorry to bring you back here at this hour, Miss Schmidt.
You're arresting me because of the passport. Is that it?
I'm not interested in your passport. When did you last see Harry Lyme?
2 weeks ago.
I want the truth. We know that Lyme is alive.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
I just come from the cemetery. Another man was buried in his place.
Where is he? Where is Harry?
That is what we want to find out.
I do not seem able to understand anything you say. He is alive now. This minute he is doing something.
We know he's somewhere in the Russian zone. In a few minutes, Captain Brodsky will be questioning you about your papers. Tell me where Lyme is.
I do not know.
If you help me, I'm prepared to help you.
Martin's always said you were a fool.
Vienna's a closed city, Miss Schmidt. Lyme can't get away.
I wish he were dead. He would be safe from all of you then.
You leave me no alternative. All right, Sergeant. Take her to Brodsky.
I called on Dr. Winkle early the next morning. I told him I wanted to talk to Harry Lime.
Harry Lime? Mr. Martins, are you mad?
All right, I'm mad. I've seen a ghost. You just tell Harry I want to see him today, this afternoon.
Be reasonable. How can you stand there and...
I saw Harry last night. Now, I passed a park a few blocks from here, an amusement park. You tell Harry I'll meet him there. You can arrange it. You or Kurtz.
You take a great deal for granted, Mr. Martins.
Do I? Or do ghosts only ride by night, Dr. Finkel? He was there at the amusement park at 3 o'clock, Harry Lime, striding down the midway, a broad smile on his face, immaculate and chipper as always.
Holly, Holly, old man, how are you?
Hello, Harry.
Well, well, I seem to be giving you quite a busy time.
Now listen, I want to talk to you.
Of course. Come on, let's go on the Ferris wheel.
Ferris wheel.
Business must be bad. Look, not a soul to get in our way. We'll have it all to ourselves, our little talk. Or does it make you dizzy way up there?
Come on, we're wasting time.
Ah, what's wrong with this? Well, up we go, Holly. Kids used to ride this thing a lot in the old days, but they haven't the money anymore, poor devils. It's good to see you, old man.
Maybe it is, considering I was at your funeral.
It was pretty smart, wasn't it?
You know what happened to your girl?
Hmm?
She's been arrested.
Tough, eh? Tough. Bob, don't worry. They won't hurt her.
They're handing her over to the Russians.
What can I do, old man? I'm dead, aren't I? Holly, exactly who did you tell about me? Hmm?
I told the police.
Unwise, old man. Unwise.
And Anna.
And did the police believe you?
You don't care anything at all about Anna, do you?
Well, I've got quite a lot on my mind.
You wouldn't do anything for her.
What do you want me to do? Be reasonable. Do you expect me to give myself up?
Why not?
Holly, you and I aren't heroes. The world doesn't make any heroes outside of your stories. I've got to be so careful. I'm safe only here in the Russian zone. And I'm safe here only as long as they can use me.
As long as they can use you. So that's how they found out about Anna. You told them, didn't you?
Don't try to be a policeman, old man.
What do you expect me to be,
part? You can have any part you want as long as you don't interfere. I've never cut you out of anything.
Yes, I remember the time they raided that gambling joint. You knew a safe way out.
Sure.
Yeah. Safe for you. Not safe for me.
Old man, you should never have gone to the police, you know. You ought to leave this thing alone.
Have you ever seen one of your victims?
Victims? Look down there, Holly. Way down there. Would you really feel any pity if one of those dots of humanity stopped moving forever? If I offered you £20,000 for every dot that stopped, would you really, old man, tell me to keep my money? Or would you calculate how many dots you could afford to spare, free of income tax?
A lot of good your money will do you in jail.
You forget. That jail's in the other zone. There's no proof against me. Besides you.
I should be pretty easy to get rid of.
Pretty easy?
I wouldn't be too sure.
I carry a gun. I don't think they'd look for a bullet wound after you hit the ground. No, not from this height.
They've dug up your coffin, Harry.
And found Harping. Pity. Holly, what fools we are to talk this way. As though I'd do anything to you or you to me. You're just a little mixed up about things in general. Nobody thinks in terms of human beings. Governments don't. Why should we? They talk about the people and the proletariat. I talk about the suckers and the mugs. It's the same thing. They have their 5-year plan, so have I.
You used to believe in God.
I still believe in God, old man. I believe in God and mercy and all that, but I'm also convinced that the dead are happier dead. They don't miss much here, now do they? Well, it appears our little journey into the ozone is over. Where are you going?
I'm not sure.
Then wait a minute. I'd like to cut you in, Holly. Nobody left in Vienna I can really trust, and we've done so many things together. When you make up your mind, send me a message through Kurtz. I'll meet you any place, any time. But it'll be you I want to see, old man, not the police. Remember that, eh? And don't be so gloomy. After all, it's not that awful. Remember what the fellow said? In Italy, for 30 years under the Borgias, they had warfare, terror, murder, and bloodshed. But they produced Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and the Renaissance. In Switzerland, they had brotherly love. They had 500 years of democracy and peace. And what did they produce? The cuckoo clock. So long, Holly.
Here, Martins, in the international zone. Why not a cafe, a restaurant, anywhere?
You expect too much, Calloway. I know he deserves to hang, but don't ask me to tie the rope.
Okay, Martins. Forget it.
Pardon me, Major. Are you busy?
Oh. Yes, come in, Captain Brodsky.
We have identified the girl called Anna Schmidt.
Oh, yes. Well, I've questioned her, Captain. We have nothing against her.
But we have. We shall apply for her tomorrow at the four-power meeting. She has no right to be here.
I've made an application, too. I've asked your people to help me with Harry Lyme.
That is a different case, Major. It is being looked into. Good afternoon.
That's the sort of thing we're up against, Martins.
What price would you pay for Harry Lyme?
A considerable price.
Anna Schmidt's freedom?
Yes, Mr. Martins. I think even that might be arranged.
That's your train over there, miss. If there's anything else I can do?
I do not understand, Major Calloway, Sergeant. Why has he done this, helping me to run away?
I expect he's got a soft spot for you, miss. You're well out of things now. Good luck, miss.
Thank you.
Two minutes before the train leaves, Anna.
Oh, what are you doing here?
Oh, I just wanted to see you off. Well?
How did you know I'd be here? You have seen Major Calloway again.
Of course not. Now, Anna, send me a wire as soon as you arrive.
Where is Harry?
He's safe in the Russian zone. I saw him this afternoon.
How is he?
Oh, he can look after himself. Don't you worry.
Did he say anything about me? Tell me.
All the usual things.
No, something is wrong. Did you tell Calloway about meeting him?
Of course I didn't tell Calloway.
Then why should he help me like this? The Russians will only make trouble for him.
Oh, that's his headache.
Why are you lying to me?
We're getting you out of here, aren't we?
No, I will not go. You have seen Calloway. What are you two doing?
Well, they asked me to help take him, and I'm helping.
Poor Harry.
Poor Harry. Poor Harry wouldn't even lift his finger to help you.
You have your precious honesty. You want nothing else, do you?
You still want him?
No, I do not want him. I do not want to see him or hear him. But he's still a part of me, and to harm him, to... No. No, I cannot do it.
Get on the train.
No.
Why do we always have to quarrel?
If you want to sell your services, it does not mean I am willing to be the price. I loved him. You loved him. What good have we done him? Love. Look at yourself. They have a name for faces like that.
Anna didn't leave. I asked Calloway to get me on the first plane out of Vienna. This time he said I'd need a priority. He told me to come with him. He had another call to make first.
You know what this place is, don't you?
Hospital.
Yeah. I really didn't have to come here. I just thought it might interest you. Open that door, Mr. Martins. This is a ward. All the children you see in there are the result of Lyme's penicillin racket. Most of them had meningitis. Terrible pity, isn't it? Children. There are 40 of them in this one ward. No, I'm wrong. 38. Two of them died last night. Well, you'd better be on our way. Your priority. You'll be going straight to New York, I suppose. Well, let's see. With any sort of connections, you should
all
be
all right, all right, Calloway. You win.
Win? Win what?
I'll stay. I'll be your dumb decoy duck.
Thanks, Martins.
The plan was very simple. Through Kurtz, I got word to Harry that I wanted to see him. Calloway picked the spot, the Cafe Orel, at 6 o'clock. At 6:05, I sat down at a table in the corner, my eyes glued on the entrance for Lyme. I didn't even see her walk up.
He does not come. Not Harry.
Anna, how did you know I...
Kurtz told me.
Kurtz, but now Kurtz has been arrested. The others, too.
I know. Major Galloway stopped me out there on the street. Harry will not come. He is not a fool.
He'll come.
What is your price this time?
Oh, no price, Anna. Please go away.
Honest, sensible, harmless Holly Martins. Holly, what a silly name. You must feel very proud to be a police informer, to be able to...
She stopped talking. She just stood there, across the cafe in the doorway. Was Harry lying?
Harry, get away! The police are waiting for you! Run! Run!
Suddenly there was a gun in his hand. Sergeant Payne was in front of him now. Harry fired once, but he never stopped moving. He ran through the cafe into the kitchen and he's gone. I was out in the street now. From all sides, the police were closing in. One group was running toward a kiosk, one of those little buildings covering the entrance to the sewer. Among them was Calloway.
Drei Minuten in der Kanal verkrochen!
Hey, bleiben! Oder schieße! Nicht! Nicht!
Martins, go back! Don't be a fool!
I've got a gun! I've got Sergeant Payne's gun!
Put it away and get out of here!
Where can he get to?
In the Russian zone. He'll never make it. We've got men closing in from both directions.
They'll kill him.
That is up to Mr. Lyne. Wait at my office if you like. Just get out of here!
I went back to the street. There was a taxi on the corner, and I gave Anna's address. But it was the sewer I was thinking of. The sewer and the kiosk in the square across from Anna's house. I climbed down the iron ladder and waited. Far off, I could hear the shouts of the police, and below, as I clung to the wet wall, the sluggish churning of the water. And then a different sound. Someone was coming closer. Closer.
Stay where you are, Harry.
Holly?
Yes.
My friend. My good friend, Holly.
You're through, Harry. You haven't got a chance.
I won't miss a second time, and you're in my way.
Harry, give up. Give up before the...
Suckers and mugs. All of you. Suckers and...
This was where I came in, the cemetery, the freshly dug grave, the priest reciting the credo, the grave diggers in the background, Calloway, and Anna.
Amen. In Namen des Vaters, des Sohnes, und des Heiligen Geistes. Amen.
Now it was over. The girl turned and started down the long road between the trees.
What time is it, Martins?
Oh, 2:30.
Get in the jeep. I'll have to step on it if we're going to catch that plane.
Calloway, can't you do something about Anna?
I'll do what I can, if she'll let me.
She's alone. She's so alone.
Well, perhaps I'll be able...
Now, wait a minute. Let me out.
Well, there's not much time, you know.
I can't just leave, please.
Oh, be sensible, Martins.
I haven't got a sensible name, Calloway. We had passed her. I stood at the edge of the road and waited. What could I say to her? What could I tell her? There wasn't time to think. She was in front of me now. Anna. But Anna Schmidt did not turn her head, not even a glance. She just kept walking down the road.
Who is this Hollywood star?
At 15, she left a private school in Vienna to act in films. This photogenic dark-haired beauty came to America in 1937 and was starred in her first American picture.
A Viennese American beauty?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like Hedy Lamarr.
Right. And Hedy is typical of Hollywood in her enthusiasm for new looks with color freshener. Like so many Hollywood stars, she thinks the new Lux is more wonderful than ever. Insists on it for all her lovely washables. New Lux with color freshener keeps white things dazzling white. Prints sparkling. All colors gay as new every time you wash them. It's a real beauty bath for colors. And so safe. Take Hedy Lamarr's tip. Get New Lux with color freshener tomorrow. Give all your nice things that lovely Lux look.
Heard in our cast tonight were Ben Wright as Major Calloway, Edgar Barrier as Baron Kurtz, Ted DeCorsia as Harry, and Fritz Feld, Harold Dyron IV, Bill Johnstone, Herbert Butterfield, Jack Crucian, Robert Boone, Norman Field, Jeffrey Silver, Gladys Holland, and Eddie Marr. Our play was adapted by S.H. Barnett, and our music was directed by Rudy Schrager. Stay tuned for My Friend Irma, which follows over these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Third Man is credited as being based on a novella by Graham Greene. It's kind of an interesting story there from what I've read. It is based on a novella by Graham Greene, but the novella was not published until 1950, a year after the film came out. You see, first Greene wrote a treatment, which was the novella, and then the novella was turned into the screenplay. If you're wondering about that interesting instrument that plays the theme, well, it's a zither, and the score was done by Anton Karas. Probably he's best remembered for this.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. To learn more or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. This reading by John George. Rex Ex Machina by Frederick Max. One final lesson. A dying man's last letter to his only son that completes the young man's education. My dear son, the doctors have left, and I'm told that in a few hours I shall die. In my lifetime, the world has progressed from the chaotic turmoil of the early atomic era to the peacefulness and tranquility of our present age, and I die content. For 10 years, I have instructed you in all that you will need for the future. One final lesson remains to be taught. On the wall of my bedchamber hangs a citation: from a grateful government for services too secret to herein set forth. In past years, you've asked me repeatedly about this citation, but each time I've taken pains to avoid a direct answer. Now it is proper that you should know.
40 years ago, I was an obscure Army captain stationed at the Armed Forces Language School in Monterey, California. I had, at that time, just completed a tour of duty in Korea, a minor skirmish of that era, and despite an excellent reputation for resourcefulness, I had drawn Monterey as my next assignment. An aptitude for foreign languages had led to an instructorship in the Russian department with additional duties instructing in the Slavic tongues. My life was pleasant and uneventful, and it was with mixed emotions that I received orders to report to Washington for a new duty assignment. The chain of events which precipitated those orders were to change the world. For while you and I were playing on the lawn of our Monterey home, an unknown Hungarian physicist, working under Russian supervision, had made a startling discovery. Within a matter of days, alarming rumors of his work reached Washington. Our embassies in Moscow and Belgrade reported furious activity in the field of psychic research and large-scale experiments in mass hypnosis. Four of us were selected to investigate the rumors. Before we could commence our undertaking, word reached Washington that the rumors were now actualities. A device capable of mass hypnosis of great segments of the world's population was rapidly reaching perfection. After 3 months of intensive grooming in the fields of physics and psychology, we four agents set out individually with orders to track down and destroy both the scientist and his machine. I never saw the other three again. During the 3 months of schooling, other members of our vast intelligence organization had been engaged in laying the groundwork for our efforts. In December 1955, I slipped into Russia and took the place of a government official who felt that Western civilization offered greater reimbursement than Soviet communism. I entered into my new role with trepidation, but my fears were unfounded. Thanks to a remarkable resemblance, which was the original reason for my selection, and also due to a most thorough briefing, I found myself making the substitution with ease. I pride myself on the fact that by diligent application, I was able to increase my worth to the Russian government to the extent that I was shortly able to secure my transfer to the psychological warfare section of the secret police. From there, it was a simple procedure to have myself assigned to what was known as Project Parchek. The device was in its final stage of development. Only the problem of increasing its effective range remained to be solved. 3 weeks after my assignment to the project, its successful conclusion was accomplished. In June 1956, the Russian government ordered me to a small house on the outskirts of Bralia, Hungary, where I was to attend a private showing of the device. By design, I arrived one day early and made my way to the laboratory immediately. Dr. Michael Parchek, the inventor, stood facing me as I entered. On a table between us lay a small, complicated mechanism, resembling a radio transmitter. But it was infinitely more than that. The device was a thought generator, capable of hypnotizing every thinking creature on the face of the earth. The power of infinite goodness or evil, which the machine embodied, was terrifying to consider. I listened to Parchek's boasting with revulsion. Although he had the ability to work for the ultimate good of mankind, this creature intended, instead, to use his newly found power for selfish aggrandizement. I drew him out, let him explain the inner workings of his device, and killed him. My orders were to destroy the machine. I disobeyed them. Utilizing the machine to make good my escape, I left Hungary and returned to the United States. The citation which you have seen was only one of many honors which were bestowed upon me. A few weeks later, I resigned my commission and retired to a country hideaway to experiment further with the device I was supposed to have destroyed. The peace and tranquility in which we of the earth now live mark the successful culmination of my experiments. You will find the machine walled up in the north alcove of my bedchamber. Your education is now complete, my son. Use it well. Be kind to our slave peoples. The world is yours. Your affectionate father, Francis I. Emperor of the Earth. Rex Ex Machina by Frederick Max.
Well, we're going to take a bit of a break right now, but we'll be back very soon with X minus one. Next on X minus one is Venus is a Man's World. In this story from February the 6th of 1957, the future Earth has been taken over by women. Men have been deprived of the vote, and men, to a very large degree, have moved to Venus. So in this future, I guess you'd have to say, women are from Earth and men are from Venus. This story originally appeared in Galaxy magazine for July of 1951, which may account for its somewhat antiquated and misogynistic views of women. Still, I like William Penn, and I think maybe you'll enjoy this if it doesn't piss you off too much.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2... X minus one, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, the time, 150 years from now, the place, a luxury spaceship en route to Venus, the story, Venus is a Man's World, by William Ten.
Some fellows are lucky. They have brothers, but not me. I have nothing but sisters. Two of them, Carrie and Evelyn. Sometimes Carrie isn't too bad, for a girl, I mean. But Evelyn, boy, she's hopeless. It was Evelyn's idea to put me on that spaceship, jam-packed with 300 females, and all of them aching to get themselves husbands. In the one place that's still to be had, the planet Venus. Well, anyway, 20 minutes after we took off from the spaceport, I was bored stiff.
Ferdinand, do stop fidgeting and sit down.
I don't have anything to do.
Well, I'll read to you and Carrie. Would you like that?
No. I want to do something.
What's the name of the book, sis?
Well, it's titled Family Problems of the Frontier Woman. Doesn't it sound intriguing?
Peachy keen.
That's enough out of you, young man. Why don't you take a walk around the ship?
Can I go with Ferdinand, sis?
Well, wouldn't you rather we start the book?
You should, Carrie. Every girl should read about the family problems of the frontier woman.
Keep quiet, you boy.
Oh, children, let's have enough of that. Now, go ahead, run along, you two. And Carrie, look after Ferdinand. See that he keeps out of mischief.
Gee, this is one big ship, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
I sort of wish we were on a cargo ship instead of this liner.
Why? This is super.
On a cargo ship, we could go climbing from deck to deck on a ladder. We could even go to the bridge or the forecastle and talk with the crew.
That's silly. Why would anyone want to do that?
Because ship's crews are men.
Only because we women are too busy with important things like government to run ships.
Says you. Hey, what are you looking at?
This sign. In the event of disaster affecting the oxygen content of the companionway, break glass with hammer upon wall. Remove spacesuit and proceed to don it.
Boy, I hope we have that kind of a disaster. I sure would like to get into one of those.
Oh, you're silly.
Hey, let's go exploring down this way. I see some portholes.
And I see a sign that says, notice, passengers are not permitted past this point.
Come on, there's no one around. And besides, I'm not really a passenger.
Ferdinand, you say you're not really a passenger. Well, what do you mean?
You have to be a citizen of a planet in order to get a passport, right?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'm telling you. Ever since they passed that Male Suffrage Act, only women can be Earth citizens. You and Evelyn are passengers, all right. But me, I'm just a male dependent. So when a sign says, off limits for passengers, doesn't mean me. I'm not a passenger, see?
Keep away from that door, Ferdinand. Can't you see the sign?
You and your old signs.
Ferdinand, let's go back to the cabin.
I want to see what's behind this door.
If you don't come back with me this very minute, I'll tell Evelyn.
So what? Hey, this looks like a sign o'clock. I wonder if it works by knock or voice.
Ferdinand, I'm going.
Say, I remember one voice key. I wonder if it'll work. 2023, open sesame.
Ferdinand!
Out of all the million possible combinations, I hit it just right. The door clicked open into a dimly lit hole. As the door closed, a hand closed around my throat. The lights came on, and I found myself staring up the muzzle of a highly polished blaster, held by the biggest man I'd ever seen. We just stood there looking at each other for a while, till finally he said...
Why, you're only a tadpole.
Sir?
The little tadpole. I must be getting jumpy enough to splash.
My name is Ferdinand Sparling. I'm very pleased to meet you, Mr.
I hope for your sake you aren't a tadpole brother to one of them husbandless Anura.
Husbandless what?
Anura. Herd of females looking a nest. I come from Flatway, folks.
You're a Venusian?
Yep. What part of Earth are you from? And what are you doing on a spaceship to Venus?
You know, the 3 out of 4.
How's that?
The 3 out of 4. No more than 3 women out of every 4 on Earth can expect to find husbands. Not enough men to go around, you know, with the Third Atomic War and all. Why, back in the 20th century, some of our best men went to the planets. My sister Evelyn says that by now, most of the men on Earth aren't even worth marrying.
That's for sure. Those busybody Anura took care of that. Earth, what a place. I had a belly full.
Why did you come in the first place?
I came looking for a wife. Women are pretty scarce on Venus. I heard that there was a surplus of them on Earth.
I can't understand why any man would even want to marry a woman.
How old are you, Tadpole?
13, almost 14.
Well, that explains a lot of things, Tadpole.
It doesn't explain why you're heading back to Venus.
Because I was in trouble the minute I landed on that woman's world. I didn't know I had to register at a government-operated hotel for transient males. Imagine, they told me a man couldn't say anything in court. All talking was done by female attorneys to a female judge. But I told them off. I told them where I come from. A man spoke his piece when he had a mind to, and his woman walked by his side.
Well, what happened?
Oh, I was found guilty of this and contempt of that. But I wasn't going to serve all those fancy little prison sentences, so I broke out and stowed away.
You mean that you're breaking the law right now?
Sure, aren't you?
Oh, I guess so. I'm also a man outside the law. We're in this together.
Shake, Ferdinand. Ferdinand? That's not a right label for a sprouting tadpole. I'll call you Ford. My name's Butt. Butt Lee Brown.
Is Butt a nickname like Ford?
Yeah, short for Alberta. But I haven't found a man who can draw a blaster fast enough to call me that. You see, Pop came over in the 80s with the first wave of immigrants from Ontario. Named all of us boys after Canadian provinces. I was the youngest, so I got the name they were saving for a girl.
Golly, Mr. Butt, you must have had a lot of brothers.
Yeah, full nest. There's Sass. His real name is Saskatchewan. Manny after Manitoba. And Yuke, he was named for Yukon. I got one for every province and territory in Canada.
Golly, all I have is 2 sisters.
Oh? Tell me about them.
Well, there's Carrie. She's almost 16.
Yeah, well, how about your other sister? Is she a little older?
She's old, all right. Evelyn's almost 21.
She pretty?
Who?
Your sister, Evelyn.
Oh, I don't know. She's healthy. She's got very good teeth.
If I know her breed, she's bossy and opinionated.
Well, aren't all women?
There goes the dinner gong, Ford. You better scat. Growing tadpoles need their vitamins.
Could I bring you some chow? I could stuff it in my pocket and sneak it back here.
No, thanks. I've stashed away enough provisions. I got plenty of kelp and Venusian mud grapes to last the trip. Now, you better shove off, Ford, or they'll start looking for you.
Guess I had better. Well, I'll see you right after dinner, Mr. Butt.
Just plain Butt to you, Ford.
Oh, okay. I'll be seeing you. 2023, open sesame.
Ferdinand, please be seated. I want to talk with you.
Now? They just rang the dinner gong.
I am aware of that. Now, where have you been?
Around.
I demand a straight answer. Where have you been, Ferdinand?
I told you, sis, around. And don't call me Ferdinand. Call me Ford. That's what Bud calls me.
Bud? Who is Bud?
Oh, nobody. I just made it up.
Ferdinand?
I can't tell you. I can't.
You must.
Well, you promise you won't turn him in. Well, Bud's my friend. He's a Venusian. He's going home.
Aboard our ship, the Eleanor Roosevelt? Ferdinand, don't you realize you've been consorting with a stowaway, a criminal? What sort of antisocial ideas has this warmongering masculinist been putting into your head?
Bud's a nice guy. He asked about you.
Oh, indeed.
I told him you had very good teeth.
Really? Well, take me to this man.
I will if you promise not to turn him in.
No, I promise.
He's in there. The door has a sonic lock. I know the combination. Watch. 2023. Open sesame.
Oh, it's so dark in there.
Bud. Hey, Bud. I brought along my sister Evelyn. She'd like to meet you. It's all right. Put on the lights.
Oh.
An honor, Miss Sparling. Please come right in.
First, Mr. Bud,
It's Brown. Bud Lee Brown.
First, Mr. Brown, you realize that you are committing two crimes. One, the political crime of traveling without a visa, and two, the criminal act of stowing away without paying your fare.
Golly, Sitz, that's no way to talk to Bud.
I take it you either have no defense or care to make none.
I wonder if all the Anura talk like that, and you want to foul up Venus.
We haven't done so badly on Earth after the mess you men made of politics.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, hear, hear.
Oh, you keep quiet, Ferdinand. And another point, Mr. Bud Lee Brown. I don't suppose you know that under space regulations, you've made this poor child an accessory.
Bud didn't make me anything.
Let's not talk law, female. Let's talk sense. I'm in trouble because I went to Earth to look for a wife. You're standing right here now because you're on your way to Venus for a husband. So, let's.
Let's? Let's what? You daring to suggest
now,
that...
Miss Sparling, no hoopla. I'm saying let's get married and you know it.
Jesus, say yes.
And what makes you think that I consider you a desirable husband?
Figure it this way. If you wanted a poodle, you're pretty enough to pick one up on Earth. When you go charging off to Venus, you don't want a poodle, you want a man, and I'm one. I own 3 islands in the Gallatin Archipelago. Good farmland when they're cleared. I got no bad habits, outside of having my own way. I'm passable good-looking. My teeth are good, too. Besides, if you marry me, you'll be the first mated on this ship, and that's a splash most nesting females like to make.
You know, there's more to marriage than just doing...
So there is. Well, we can try each other for taste. Now, me, I'd vote yes.
Me, too. I'd vote yes.
Now I'll cast my vote.
Well, you guessed it. She broke her promise. I suppose the kiss did it. She put it a stowaway to the captain, and he sent the detail from the ship's crew to halt Bud off to the brig. Well, later that afternoon, all the passengers, 300 females and me, gathered in the lounge for the hearing. It's all on account of you.
Shush!
Don't shush me. You promised your word wouldn't get Bud into trouble.
Oh, you snitch.
Shush! The captain is rapping for quiet.
By authority vested in me under the Pomona College Treaty, the stowaway, a Venusian, Bud Lee Brown, will be tried for violation of Article 16 to 21, inclusive, of the Space Transport Code. Purser, bring in the prisoner.
Ladies! Those cheap extroverts, and they call themselves responsible.
Ladies! Dear ladies! Thank you, ladies. Bud Lee Brown, I order your person and belongings impounded for the duration of this voyage as set forth in sections 41 and 45.
Captain, the sections are 43 and 45.
You're quite right, Miss Sparling. Sections 43 and 45 of the Mother Anita Law Emergency Interplanetary Directive.
Aren't you even going to give me a fair trial before you hang me?
Ladies, I beg of you, ladies.
Captain, what exactly are the charges against me?
You're a stowaway.
I can pay for my passage.
You can? Well, then I guess we can dismiss the charges. Ladies, gentle ladies.
Just a moment, Captain.
Yes, Miss Barling?
I demand justice. You can't let him off that lightly. Besides, there's the other charge.
What other charge?
Assault. That comes under sections 18 through 35 of the McDonald Law.
It does? Well, then, would you tell the court in your own words exactly what happened?
Well, when I first laid eyes on Mr. Brown, he seemed to be a fundamentally decent chap, despite his barbaric notions on equality between the sexes, or worse. I was positive I could shame him into a more rational social behavior and make him give himself up.
Go on, Miss Barling.
Just as I was getting over the colossal impudence involved in his proposing marriage and was considering the offer seriously on its merits, as one should consider all suggestions, he deliberately dropped the pretense of reason.
Get her.
Ferdinand!
My name is Ford, and you're nothing but a big snitch. You promised not to get butt into trouble.
Well, how do you like that?
Your name is Ferdinand, and stop trying to act forcefully like a girl. It doesn't become you.
Miss Barling, did I understand you to say that you were considering Mr. Brown's proposal of marriage?
That is true. I will not deny that he appealed to me. He appealed to me as most savage ancients appeal to their women, as an emotional machine. Throw the proper switches, says his theory, and the female surrenders herself ecstatically to the doubtful and bloody murk of masculine plans.
I'm afraid I still don't understand. What exactly did Mr. Brown do?
He kissed me.
Ladies, please. Mr. Brown, do you deny kissing, Miss Barling?
No, Miss Barling, do you deny enjoying the kiss?
Your question is irrelevant and immaterial.
Oh, she enjoyed it.
How would you know?
Well, I was right there. I could tell the way she acted. She sort of held the back of his neck, closed her eyes, and just hung on.
What were you doing there?
I introduced him. I met Bud first, then I took Sis over there to meet him.
I see. Ferdinand Sparling, I hereby order your detention for the duration of this voyage for aiding and abetting a stowaway as set forth in sections 41
43
and 43
and 45.
And 45.
And you can't arrest Ferdinand. He's only a child. You gave me your word no charges would be lodged against the boy.
That was the usual promise one makes to an informer. But I made it before I knew it was Butt Lee Brown you were talking about. I didn't want to arrest Butt Lee Brown. You forced me. So, I'm breaking my promise to you, just as I understand you broke your promise to your brother. I'm afraid both Ferdinand and Butt Lee Brown will be picked up at New Kalamazoo Spaceport and sent Terraward for trial.
But I used all our money to buy passage.
I'm sorry. You'll have to return with your brother. Of course, there is a way out.
There is? Well, tell me, please.
Miss Sparling, if you'd marry Brown... Don't look at me like that. If you'd marry Brown, he would go on your passport as a dependent male member of your family.
Do you think I'd marry that desperado? Why, he doesn't know enough to sit back and let a woman run things. Captain, you should be ashamed of yourself.
I'll marry him!
Perhaps I should be, but that's what comes of putting men in responsible positions. See here, Miss Barling, I didn't want to arrest Brown. I'd still prefer not to. The officers and crew of my ship all go along with me.
Why not? Men always think like men. They never use logic. They just rely on masculine intuition.
Maybe so. This ship's crew are all residents of Earth. But our work requires us to be on Venus several times a year. We wouldn't want to cross any member of the Brown clan. They're all men of influence on the polar continent.
No, I wouldn't doubt that for a second. If anyone gets in their way, they merely oxidize them with a blaster.
Take Butt. He's a big man in his own bailiwick, the Gallertan Archipelago. When he wants to put somebody in office, well, he just appoints them.
Mr. Brown has that much influence, you say?
Power, actually. The kind a strong man usually wields in a newly settled community.
Oh, Mr. Brown, if I marry you, would you promise to see that I'm appointed resident governor of the Gallertan Archipelago?
No.
Attaboy, Bart. Don't give in.
Ferdinand, this does not concern you. Mr. Brown, I might even consider a county clerkship.
Nope.
Stick by your blasters, Bart. Show me you're a real man.
Mr. Brown, it would seem to me that if you really want to marry this attractive young lady, a compromise could be worked out.
Well, I could make her sheriff.
Oh, no.
Would the position of sheriff of the Gallertan Archipelago be acceptable, Miss Barling?
Yes.
Good. I'll marry you here and now.
I want to be a bridesmaid. Always a bridesmaid. Never a bride. Let's be every bride.
But you shouldn't have sold out. Why did you do it? You don't have to marry her for my sake. I wouldn't care what they did to me.
That's all right, Tadpole. I'd do anything for my favorite brother-in-law.
It sure like to be your brother-in-law. But gosh, you don't have to marry Sis. You've had any one of these 300 females. Why marry Sis?
I'm stubborn. What I like at first, I keep on liking. What I want at first, I keep on wanting until I get it.
Yeah, but making her sheriff. What's going to happen to our man's world?
Don't worry none about that, Ford, my boy. Wait till after we meet and go out to my islands. She'll find herself sheriff over exactly two Earth males, you and me. And I got a hunch that'll keep her pretty busy, huh? How about that, huh?
Tonight, X-1 has brought you Venus is a Man's World, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by William Ten and adapted for radio by Arthur Small. Featured in our cast were Dennis Bellabio as Ford, Bob Haig as Butt, Jerry Ann Raphael as Carrie, John Gibson as the Captain, and Frederica Chandler as Evelyn. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
The Witch's Tale was a very successful radio program dating back to, well, very nearly the earliest days of radio. Commercial radio really didn't hit its stride until about 1920 or so, and this program began in 1931, running to 1938 on WOR and Mutual and Syndication. It was created, written, and directed by Alonzo Dean Cole. The show was hosted by Old Nancy, the Witch of Salem, who introduced a different tale every week. Initially, Old Nancy was played by a stage actress named Aladine Fritz Allen, who died in 1935 at the age of 79. Maybe made a little sensitive by this, Cole replaced her with a 13-year-old, Miriam Wolfe. Oh, occasionally other people hosted the show. Martha Wentworth was also heard as Old Nancy on occasion. The cat, Satan, was played by Cole himself. And most of the time, the leading female character was played by Maria Flynn, who happened to be Cole's wife. There aren't too many of these shows that have survived, as Cole himself destroyed the recordings in 1961. Don't know why. Tonight's show, Rat in a Trap, was originally broadcast on May the 16th of 1932.
The Witch's Tale. The fascination of the eerie, weird, blood-chilling tales told by Old Nancy, the Witch of Salem, and Satan, her wise black cat. They are waiting, waiting for you.
Ah! 102-year-old I be today. Yes, sir, 102-year-old. Well, Satan, now it's time to spin these folks another of our cheerful little bedtime stories. Douse out them lights so we'll have it nice and dark. When you listens to our tales, sitting in the gloom, it helps you to have purty dreams. Now, draw up to the fire and gaze into the embers. Gaze into them deep And soon you'll be away out west in Michigan. And there, in a fine big house, where there's a party going on, begins our yarn called Rat in a Trap. Rat in a Trap!
Didn't know you were out here on the veranda, Denny.
Enjoying the night air, Mr. Copper.
It's as hot as blazes inside. But young fellas like you should be in there dancing in spite of the heat.
I'm afraid I'm not much of a dancer.
You mean when the only girl you care to dance with doesn't happen to be around, eh? Son, you're certainly a model for husbands. Too bad Lucy didn't come in with you this morning. She'd have enjoyed this.
Yeah, I wish she had come along the way things turned out. But you know I expected to return on the late afternoon train.
I'm glad you missed that last train, so we can have you here tonight.
Yes, it's nice to be here, but this is the first night Lucy and I have been separated since our marriage.
Nowadays, ladies have the vote. One of the first things a rising young lawyer with political ambitions must learn is not to appear too much married.
Oh, I forgot that you're trying to make me president someday.
I may, but right now we'll compromise on United States Senator. Seriously, son, you have the stuff, and people have begun to talk about you. You're pretty young for the job, but I've about decided to run you for prosecutor next election. Think you can make good?
I? Oh, all I can say is that I'll do my best.
That's pretty fair from what you've shown so far, but, Dan, you have a couple of faults that won't fit so well in the district attorney's office.
Oh, what do you mean?
You know, you've shut off your mouth a lot about certain disagreements you have with our criminal code.
Well, I've said that our laws are unfitted to the crimes they were designed to control. I've said that because I think it. Our penal code is wholly unsuited to cope with the 1,001 types of crime and the varied individuals who commit it. If I had the power, I'd amend that code so that it would cease to be a makeshift of political expediency and instead would truly serve the cause of justice.
Doggone, that's as good a piece of campaign propaganda as I ever listened to.
Oh, I meant what I said.
Maybe you did, but you said it like a politician, and that's what interests me. I take back what I said about your faults. Develop them. But it's getting late. Come and dance with some of those pretty girls inside before the party breaks out.
I'd better telephone Lucy first. I feel a little uneasy. That summer place of ours is so isolated back in the woods and...
Lucy's not alone there.
No, Pete Lorillard and his wife are with her. Or if she'd been alone, I'd have hired a cab and driven back tonight instead of waiting for the morning train.
Over those roads, you'd arrive tomorrow afternoon. Come on, let's go inside.
All right.
Oh, there you are, Dick. Oh, we've been looking for you everywhere, you and Abner. There's a lovely little blonde simply dying to meet you.
Oh, well, I've come gladly to save her life, but I really think I should call up Lucy once more, if you don't mind.
I do mind. And so will Lucy if you call her at this hour. Daddy, she'll be sound asleep.
I suppose you're right, but somehow I...
Speaking of telephones, Hello? Who do you want? Daniel Miller.
Oh, for me.
It's Lucy.
Lucy?
Dan, she's crying. There's something the matter.
Something the matter? Yeah, give me that phone. Lucy? Yes, dear, this is Dan. What's wrong, darling? You sound hysterical. You say the Lorillards were called away this afternoon? You're alone? Three men are breaking in the house? Lucy! Lucy! Oh, my God!
Hobos, drunken brutes, they're breaking in.
Oh, God.
They'll be inside the house in a moment.
Lucy and I'm 50 miles away.
Yes, you can't help me, and I can't help myself. We're both helpless. Helpless, as rats in a trap. May God forgive me for what I'm making you suffer, but I had to call you to hear your voice for the last time.
The last time?
Yes, the last. These men are beasts. They're drunken. They know I'm alone.
You have a gun? The gun I gave you.
I have it in my hand. I fired all the shots but one. I saved that for myself.
No, no.
It's the only way. Listen, dear. Listen, please. You can't help me now. But maybe you can punish after I'm dead.
Oh, God, Lucy.
Listen, darling. I have so little time. The leader came here this afternoon begging food, and I saw him plainly. He's a big, dark, unshaven man with a livid, crisscrossed scar above his left eye that runs from brow to temple. Remember, dear. Remember.
Oh, Lucy.
Wait. Mr. Lorillard drove him away. Then the Lorillard were called at home. The man had been watching. He came back with two others. One, short with red hair. The other...
Okay, one last break here, and then we'll be right back.
He came back with two others. One, short with red hair. The other, a blonde man with a limp. Remember, dear. Remember. They're in the house. The lock to this door won't hold a moment. They're beating at it now. The door is giving. I have the gun ready. A bullet through my head. They can't hurt me. Remember them, dear. Remember. They're here.
Please.
I love you, dear. Goodbye.
And boy, you shouldn't have come to my office today. A man who's just spent 6 months in the hospital has no business to even poke his nose outside of doors.
I'm quite strong now, Mr. Cowper, and I had to come and have a talk to you. While I was in the hospital, out of what you thought was kindness, you've censored all police reports to me. Now I want you to tell me whether they honestly expect to ever find the creatures that caused my wife to put a bullet through her head.
Danny,
I want the truth.
All right, son. I won't lie to you. I've kept the cops working on this case as they've never worked before. They haven't fallen down because they've never had a single worthwhile clue to work on. When they arrived at your house in the woods that night, the men who broke in had disappeared. We assume they were hobos of the most depraved type. But that's all we know about them. We found no fingerprints. We have no clue to their appearance even. Except the meager description of poor frantic Lucy.
Yes. The meager description of poor frantic Lucy. A big dark man with a livid crisscross scar above his left eye that runs from brow to temple. Remember, dear. Remember. One a short man with red hair. The third a blonde man with a limp. Remember, dear. Remember.
Son, the cops have picked up hundreds. Only they've been forced to turn loose again. There's no evidence of any kind. If we had the guilty brutes before us in this room, we couldn't prove it without their own confessions. As a lawyer, you know what we're up against.
An impossible job for lawyers and police. And if our law could catch them in its net, the code provides no punishment to fit their crime. Goodbye, Mr. Cowper.
Goodbye? Why, you say that as though we mightn't meet again.
We may not. I'm leaving town tomorrow. I've got a job to do.
Say, look here. You haven't the crazy idea that you can find those men yourself? Damn. To locate those three brutes and secure evidence against them, a man might have to search the hobo jungles of this country an entire lifetime. I know how bitter you feel, son. But the past is past. And grief and hatred won't unmake it. I've got big things in store for you, boy. Pick up the threads of your normal life again. Think of your future. Your career.
My future's to remember. My career's to repay. Goodbye, Mr. Cowper.
Hello there, Lawyer Thomas. That Yankee partner yawn around?
Hey, you might find him down by the railroad yards, Jesse. Dave Borden sure picked himself some funny friends.
Well, I suppose he likes them tramps, Lloyd.
I haven't an idea.
Sure, that man's been in this town off and on for nigh 8 years now. Yet no one knows him.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Jesse. I know him pretty well.
Yeah, no wire jumps like a shell-shocked soldier every time a telephone rings.
No.
Yeah, no wise hair, snow white, when he today more than 40.
No.
Know what his real name was before he changed it to Dave Morton?
No, and them things is none of my business or yours.
Just the same, there's a mystery about that man that sort of worries me. Lawyer Thomas, why do you suppose your partner, Lawyer Morton, pays me $5 cash money for every tramp we get in the jailhouse who I persuade to take him for a tourney?
My partner pays you money to secure him hobo clients?
Are you here now to bring him such a case?
But this time it's just for joke. The client I'm bringing him today is that tramp who murdered the old woman. Big Mike, yeah, the dog Sheriff Greeley rescued from the lynching mob last night. Big Mike asked me to get him Mr. Morton for his lawyer. Yeah, said a pal of his had told him about him.
No partner of mine is touching his case. If Morton got the brute off by a miracle, they'd both be lynched.
Yeah, here's Morton now.
Hello, Jesse. Hello, Tom.
All day.
Lawyer Morton, a man over at the jailhouse who ain't got no money wants to hire you to get him out.
Thanks for bringing the message, Jesse. But if you're speaking of Big Mike, I've already seen him. I'm going to defend him.
You're going to defend Big Mike?
Yes, Tom.
Lawyer Morton, you're joking.
Dave, you're mad. The man is guilty.
Guilty as hell.
I'm going to save him from the rope because I like his looks. He's a big, dark man with a scar above his left eye. A livid crisscross scar that runs from brow to temple.
Extra fear of murder goes free. Big Mike not guilty. Extra fear. Morton wins acquittal, jury frees Big Mike. Extra pay up.
God. Look at the people buying them papers and then standing around reading and talking about me. If you hadn't to sneak me here to your house, boss, they'd have had me swinging on the lamppost by now.
Come away from the window. You're safe here, Mike.
Gee, I hope so. But you gotta get me out of town quick. They look for me here and string me up.
They'll never lynch you, Mike. I'm taking care of you now. Better have another drink, and I draw those curtains tighter.
Yeah. I do need another hooker, boss. And I'm drinking it to you. No other mouthpiece in the world could have swung that jury so they'd bring a verdict of not guilty.
No. No other in the world. I used perjured testimony, lying witnesses, a framed alibi. I used every dirty trick in the book. But I got you off, Mike. Out of jail, away from the hangman. And I've got you now. Alone with me.
See, you're acting a little crazy, boss. Say, I'll have another. You know I can't figure you out, boss. Why do you make me tell you how I croaked that old woman for you to take my case?
I was interested in you, Mike. And for 10 years it's been my rule to know the truth about my client's guilt or innocence before I took a case.
Yeah, I heard that. And every hobo from Maine to California says that spilling you the truth never brung him home. That's why I told you the works right off the bat. You got a great name in the jungle, boss.
Yeah, it took me 10 years to build that reputation, Mike. Won't you have another drink?
Thanks. But, gee, you'll have me stewed in a minute. Well, here's how again. Say, you're a funny guy. You not only spend your own dough to buy witnesses and all, but then you bring me to your house and treat me like a prince.
It's very simple, Mike. I've done the things I have because you interest me. Yeah, interest me tremendously. Yeah, I'd like to know more about your life, about your travels, experiences. Other little peccadilloes before you so neatly strangled that last old woman.
Say, why are you always asking me questions about what I done before we met?
Are you afraid to trust a man who saved your life?
Oh, but you ask such nutty questions. How long I'd had this crooked scar over my eye, for instance.
I was merely curious as to whether you had it 10 years ago when you were in Michigan.
And I told you I don't know nothing about Michigan.
Oh, come on, Mike. You've lied about that long enough. I never mentioned it before, but friends of yours have told me you were there.
What friends?
Let me see now. Oh, yeah, their names were Red and Limpy.
Red and Limpy? You know them?
Quite well. I haven't seen them lately. Have you?
No. Neither has anyone else.
What do you mean?
That they disappeared from the road. And they ain't in jail nowheres. They're just gone. What'd I tell you about me in Michigan?
The most interesting story I've ever heard. About a house in the woods. And a woman.
They told you that, eh?
Yes. Have another drink.
I'll open this fresh bottle and join him. Suppose you tell me about your Michigan adventure.
I didn't have no part in it. I didn't...
Here's your drink, Mike.
I must be off my nut to be afraid of you. I got reason to trust you. And I need help about that Michigan job. Need it bad. Listen, the word's gone round that that dame's husband has been searching ever since it happened. That he's been on the road with the bulls and riding the rails, living in the jungles, asking questions, trying to learn who caused his wife to shoot herself. They say he did for Red and Limpy, and no one's even found their bodies. He used to be a lawyer, just like you, boss. He was... God!
Why are you stopping, Mike?
The notion just crossed me mind that you might be him. I must be drunk to think a thing like that about the guy who saved me from the rope. If you was her husband, you'd have sent me there. Say, give me that drink, boss, and I'll spill the works. This liquor tastes funny, but it's good. It's swell. Drink yourn, too, boss, and I'll tell you all about a pretty little dame in the house in the woods. Helpless she was as a rat in a trap. Helpless, frightened, like I like to see him. Too bad she shot herself before. Say, boss, what's eating you? You crushed that glass in your hand as if it was paper. And your eyes look crazy. See, what you pulling them curtains on the wall for?
So you can see what lies behind them.
Just a couple of plaster statues of two guys' heads and shoulders. But the faces is all gone, so the bones are shown through. What happened to those faces?
You're going to find out, Mike. Just as Red and Limpy learned.
Red and Limpy?
These busts are their death masks. Taken in soft plaster. After they'd lain here helpless. Helpless! Helpless as rats in a trap. Is you're going to lie here, helpless, while your punishment fits your crime.
God, you're the guy...
I'm the husband of the girl you brought to death.
I'm going to get out of here. You can. You can rise from that chair.
You dope me liquor. I can't move.
I'll move you. Down to my cellar below. Down to my cellar, which I've saved you from the gallows. The news for you will be too easy, Mike. Your punishment will fix your crime.
No, let me go. Let me go. What you gonna do?
Your punishment will fix your crime. Your punishment will fix your crime. You can't see a thing in this cellar, can you, Mike? And no one's so helpless as when they're in the dark. I want you to be very helpless, Mike. More helpless than a rat in a trap. Helpless as a woman alone in the house in the woods. Helpless as a man who loved her and who heard you 50 miles away. Helpless as a man who heard the shot that killed her. He couldn't raise his hand to save her.
What you gonna do to me? Hey, you got me tied to stakes and spread eagled on the floor. But how you gonna kill me? What you gonna do?
You're struggling, Mike. But your bums will hold. I tied them very tight.
What did you do to Red and Limpy that you're gonna do to me? In them plaster busts upstairs, what happened to their faces?
Guess, Mike, guess.
If you don't tell me, I go nuts. Nuts, I tell you, raving nuts.
Oh, no, you won't. Not for many hours. I've investigated the length of time required to drive men mad. Your brain's undeveloped, so it'll take you longer than most.
Oh, help, help. God, if I could only see you. Oh, you're putting something over me head.
Yeah, part of a little apparatus that made Red and Limpy featureless. Use your imagination, Mike. You may guess how it's done.
Oh, God. Oh, God, why don't you curse at me, beat me, kick me, do something I can understand? What are you going to do to me when you leave me? How am I going to die?
When I reach the top of these stairs, you'll know. When I open the secret panel, it will soon be the door of your tomb. Then you'll have a moment's light. Just enough for a quick, short glimpse around you.
Two skeletons beside me.
The bones of Red and Limpy. What else do you see?
There's a cage coming over my head. A cage like a rat trap. Oh, these are rat traps. A rat is in it. A rat is in the cage with me. soon he'll be crawling over me head and biting. Ah! That's what happened to the other spaces. A rat! Now! Don't leave me in the dark, waiting helpless, guessing when that rat's going to start a bite. That's your punishment, Mike. Oh, goodbye.
The third Lucy and the last. I remember. And I retain.
Martin! Dave Martin! Martin!
Yes, Tom. I hear you.
For God's sake, let me in. Quick as you value your life.
I'll let you in, Tom. What's the matter, Tom?
What you knew would be the matter when you got Big Mike acquitted. A lynching mob has formed and a challenge for this house.
They won't find Big Mike here. He's gone.
They ain't after him. They're coming here with the rope to hang you, Dave.
They can hang me if they want to, Tom. They think I wish to live. I don't.
Why, you're talking like a fool. Come on. There ain't time to talk.
But I want to talk, Tom, about imagination. Imagination that can see a living rat in a crumpled old gray rag and mutilated human faces in two old broken plaster busts of poor blind justice. Imagination that kills more horribly and surely than if the things it sees were real.
Dave Morton, I think you're mad. That mama's almost here. And if they find you, they'll hang you to a tree. Keep away from that front door! Here, what are you going to do?
I'm going to meet them. Those who usurp the face of justice must expect a punishment to fit their crime.
Satan. Next time we'll have another pretty yarn to spin these folks. A very pretty yarn.
I admitted that that one was a little scratchy, not the best sound quality. But when you're more than 75 years old yourself, you may creak a little bit. And I thought it was worth hearing. Not because it was so great, but because it is what it is and from where it is. And I think it has a little bit to tell us about how much things change and how much things stay the same. Isn't that one of the reasons you listen to these old programs? Certainly one of the reasons I listen to them. Well, anyway, this is the end of the dramatic presentation portion of Night Transmission. I'm just going to play us out now for a little while with a couple of tunes. I hope to see you next week. This is Gary Clinton saying goodbye and saying stay in touch. nighttransmissions@gmail.com. Or www.nighttransitions.com. Either way, you can get to me. I hope that doesn't hurt anybody.
The night was clear, and the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down. We'll be right back.
our day will come, and we'll have everything. We'll share the joy. Falling in love can bring. No one can tell me that I'm too young to know.
Young to know.
I love you so.
Love so.
And you love me. Our day will come. If we just wait a while, no tears for us. Make love and wear a smile. Our dreams have magic because we'll always stay in love this way. Our day will come.
Our day will come.
Because we'll always stay in love this way. Our day will come. Our day will come. Our day.
Oh, hard is the fortune of all womankind. She's always controlled, she's always confined. Controlled by her parents until she's a wife. A slave to her husband the rest of her life. Oh, I'm just a poor girl, my fortune is sad. I've always been courted by the wagoner's lad. He's courted me daily, by night and by day. And now he is loading and going away. Oh, my parents don't like him because he is poor. They say he's not worthy of entering my door. He works for a living, his money's his own. And if they don't like it, they can leave him alone. Oh, your horses are hungry, go feed them some hay. Then sit down here by me as long as you may. My horses ain't hungry, they won't eat your hay. So fare thee well, darling, I'll be on my way. Oh, your wagon needs greasing, your whip is to mend. Then sit down here by me as long as you can. My wagon is greasy, my whip's in my hand. So fare thee well, darling, no longer to stand.
In the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty, I want to be in the warm hold of your loving mind. To feel you all around me and to take your hand along the sand. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind. when sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile. And everywhere I'd look, your eyes would find. For me to love you now would be the sweetest thing. T'would make me sing. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind.
Your lover.